Hey, boys and girls. Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Colvin.
Hey, 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 it's Monty. Welcome to the Rockcast.
Yeah.
On today's show, I'm going to be reading your emails and comments, answering your questions, and playing some cool tunes. But I'm also going to be reading a lot of your top tens because this is the last episode.
What?
Before the top 10 playoffs.
Playoffs?
That's right. On the next episode, I will be naming a new top 10 champion. But today, I'm going to read as many as possible as to give more of you a chance to win an amazing prize package.
Wow!
So let's get it going with a couple of lists from Keith Deering. And the first one from Keith is a list of his top 10 guilty pleasure albums. And it starts out at number 10 with something I have never heard of, which is Foxy Shazam with their album The Church of Rock and Roll. Number 9 is Jerry Reed with The Essential Jerry Reed. Number 8 is all Duran Duran CDs. And number 7 is Kiss, The Music from the Elder. Number 6 has an album title that Jimmy Jeff would like. It's called Business Up Front, Party in the Back, and it's by Family Force 5.
Yep.
Guilty pleasure number 5 is the Strength album by Enough's Enough, followed at number 4 by the Bullet Boys' 10 Cent Billionaire. Number 3 is another one I've never heard of. It's the self-titled album from Fifi Dobson.
Who?
Number 2 is all King Diamond and Merciful Fate albums. And number 1 on Keith's Guilty Pleasures list, it's ABBA with ABBA Gold. Well, good list, Keith, but you really don't have to feel guilty about liking ABBA. Because I have that album, and there's some good stuff on it. Plus, you really can't ever go wrong with Hot Chicks from Sweden.
I believe that's very valid.
Now, in what seems like a blatant attempt to increase his chances of winning an amazing prize package, Keith has sent me a second list.
It's unfair.
And this time, it's his top 10 things that suck about going to concerts. Well, all right, this sounds good, and it starts out at number 10 with Long Lines at the Bathroom. That's followed at number 9 with Drunken A-Holes.
There's nothing worse.
Yeah, well, that is true, Keith, and I highly suggest that you never come to a concert here in Kansas City.
Yep.
Number 8 is a bored band just phoning it in. Yeah, that does suck, and I really hate it when bands at the beginning of their career are running all over the stage and they're trying to win you over, and then you see them 10 years later and they're just standing there like statues, like they could care less about their fans.
And they all suck.
But whatever. Number 7 is high ticket prices.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, what has happened with ticket prices? When I was in college, you could go to an arena show for $8. And I remember getting a ticket to see Bruce Springsteen on the Born in the USA tour from a scalper, and it cost $50. And that was right down by the stage. These days, you'd be lucky to get one up in the nosebleeds for less than $100. They gotta add their service charges and this charge and that charge, and it's just a ripoff.
I'm outraged!
But getting back to Keith's list, number 6 is a short, predictable set list. Number 5 is A-holes trying to sneak to the front. And number 4 is a band making a popular song unrecognizable by changing it around too much. Yeah, I don't like that either. I saw John Waite do that to his song Change back in the 80s. You remember that song?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, maybe this will refresh your memory. Look in the mirror and see how you've been taken. Your heart. Yeah, cool song. And so back in the 80s, I go to see John Waite and Cheap Trick, and I can't wait for him to play that song. But instead of doing it like the record, he changes the melody, and it just sucked. It was like, we think we have the answer, some things are never gonna change. And I'm like, what is this? So that was disappointing, but some other little facts about this song. It was written by Holly Knight, who also wrote Ragdoll for Aerosmith. Patti Smyth from Scandal is doing the background vocals. And Neil Gerardo, who is Pat Benatar's husband and guitar player, produced the track. So there is your useless 80s trivia for today.
Amazing info.
All right, where was I before I was so rudely interrupted by John Waite? Oh yeah, back to Keith's top 10 things that suck about concerts. And number 3 is when a band tries to use volume to cover up the fact that they suck. Number 2 is there are no triple XL or larger t-shirts. Keith says, I am 6'6" tall and 325 pounds.
Huge.
He says, I would make a good walking billboard.
Massive.
And the number one thing on Keith's top 10 of things that suck about going to concerts, high ticket prices. Keith says, yes, I know I listed it twice, but what the hell? $180 for lawn tickets? Give me a break.
Come on!
Well, good job, Keith. I feel your pain, and thanks for the lists. Now, as you recall on the last episode, I did a new segment called Monty's Rock and Roll Movie Reviews. I talked about movies like Rockstar, Airheads, and Hard Day's Night by the Beatles. And I enjoyed it so much that on this episode, I'm going to do it again, except this time I'm going to talk about sports movies.
Oh.
Yeah, and the first one is a boxing movie that you probably haven't seen. It was a small independent film starring Adam Carolla, and it's called The Hammer. Now, Carolla is one of my favorite comedians, and he wrote the script to this movie, and it is funny. But it's also a nice little romantic comedy, so your wife or girlfriend would also probably enjoy it. It's about this schlub who's giving boxing lessons and doing carpentry to make a living, and he ends up going to the Olympic boxing trials. It's not the magnitude of like Raging Bull or something like that, but if you're looking for a nice little movie with some intelligent humor, get on your Netflix website and order The Hammer.
No thanks. I'm good.
Now this next one I also caught on Netflix, and it's a hockey movie called Goon. It stars Sean William Scott, who you know from American Pie, and he plays kind of a dimwit kind of guy who starts out as a bouncer at a bar and ends up getting a tryout with a minor league hockey team. And he doesn't really know how to play hockey, but he's good at fighting, and so he becomes an enforcer. And I started out watching this thinking that there was a good chance that it might suck, but it actually turned out to be a really good comedy. Like The Hammer, there's also a nice little romantic subplot built into it. But you've also got some hockey and fighting and some pretty good ass kicking.
Oh, I love stuff like that.
Some of the parts weren't totally realistic. Like at one point he gets hit in the mouth with a puck and he still manages to keep all of his teeth. But overall, I really like this movie and I would recommend it. It's got some really funny scenes in it, my favorite being when he was trying out for the minor league hockey team, His coach asks him what number he wants to wear, and his friend is up in the stands and starts screaming, 69! 69! Because it's hilarious!
I don't get it.
My other favorite scene was when his love interest in the movie comes walking up to him, and she's crying, and he looks at her and says, why are you crying? Did you just watch Rudy?
That's so funny!
Yeah, you guys that saw the movie Rudy get that joke. And those of you who haven't seen Rudy need to go and rent that because it's one of the best sports movies you'll ever see. It's a true story about a guy who all of his life has been a huge Notre Dame Fighting Irish fan. And he ends up going to college at Notre Dame and he tries out for the football team. And he's too small to play, so he just spends a lot of time on the practice squad, getting the crap knocked out of him. And in case you haven't seen it, I won't spoil the ending, but just let me say, yes, I bawled like a baby.
What a wimp!
So those are some sports movies I would recommend, but while we're on the topic of sports, did you hear Jason Collins became the first openly gay player to play in an NBA game?
No.
Oh yeah, it was a huge deal. ESPN couldn't quit talking about it, and they had a big news conference with him, and Michelle Obama just couldn't be more proud of his bravery. Only problem is, Jason Collins as a basketball player, he sucks.
What?
He's a journeyman backup center who, last I checked, averages about 2 points a game, even though he's 7 foot tall. But somehow it's the lead story on ESPN, and they won't quit talking about it. Kind of like they won't quit talking about Michael Sam, the first openly gay football player, even though, as it turns out, he's not very good either. And I have to ask myself, why are they spending all this time talking about a guy who may or may not be a sixth-round draft choice? Well, I'll tell you why. Because we are being brainwashed, my friends. And every time we turn on our televisions or radios, we are being told what we're supposed to think. And who would have thought that one of the leaders of politically correct propaganda would be the National Football League? They've spent the whole offseason trying to decide if a 350-pound white guy actually bullied another 350-pound black guy.
Say what?
The bully in question was named Richie Incognito, and after a thorough investigation, it was determined that he's a total racist and should probably never play again.
Absolutely not.
And apparently he used the N-word in a text message, and he called one of the Asian trainers of the football team a Chinaman.
Oh my God.
And I'm listening to ESPN radio one day, and these announcers are just freaking out. They're like, that guy's a scumbag. And I thought, really? Because the other day I heard an Asian comedian making fun of black people, and he was making fried chicken jokes. And yet no one seemed to care. But apparently the NFL and ESPN care because they are not going to tolerate any of that kind of language. In fact, the National Football League now has a new rule they are proposing where no player can say the N-word. And if they catch you saying that word, they will give you a 15-yard penalty.
That's right.
However, ironically, guess who has a problem with the new rule?
Who?
The black players.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, I kid you not, but the NFL says, hey, you can still use any kind of profanity you want, just don't say the N-word.
Mm-hmm, I know that's right.
So the world of sports can be politically correct as they want to be, but the fact is, you're not going to stop people from trash-talking. You can try to make people conform and be all nicey-nice with each other and say all the right things, but when it comes down to it, some people just like to be hateful. I mean, believe it or not, even I'm kind of hateful sometimes.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I try to be nice to everyone, and in the past, I really tried to be nice to people. When I was on tour, after the shows, I'd hang out with people and talk to the fans, and I'd even send them handwritten letters if they write me. If they wanted something signed, I was always happy to do it. I'd even invite people backstage and onto the bus. And so I always tried to treat people right, and then along came the internet. Up until around 1998 or 99, I'd never been online that much, and especially not a message board. So one day I get an email from this guy, and he says, I run the King's X message board, and I'd like you to come on and be our special guest. You can come on and talk about Galactic Cowboys and Crunchy and anything you want, but I got a lot of people are really excited to talk to you. And so I think, oh, well, that could be cool. A lot of nice people out there, you know. Be nice to connect with the fans.
That sounds really good, doesn't it?
So we set up a time, and the guy even advertises that I'm going to be in the chat room at 7 o'clock. And he gives me a password, and I log in, and all of a sudden I start seeing these names rolling by. And I start seeing screen names like Vagina of Satan.
Isn't the name terrific?
And I'm like, okay, well, that's a little weird, but whatever. There was some nice people on there saying, hey, Monty, what's going on? But within minutes, these punk-ass little pussies were just calling me every name in the book. And I'm just thinking, what the hell is this? I had no idea this is what was going to go on. So I just sat there for a few minutes, and I finally just said, screw it, I'm out of here. And that was pretty much my introduction to a fan site. Since then, I've discovered that there's many ways to be a big shot on the internet without ever having to show your face. Who cares if you've never done anything in your life or if you have no credibility whatsoever? Just get online and start shooting your mouth off. And to those people, I dedicate this next song. It's by a band called Diffuser, and it's off the Making the Great album. Enjoy.
Yeah.
know, I just discovered recently I've got some great listeners in Memphis, Tennessee.
This is fascinating.
Of course, there's Rodney in Memphis, who I've done paintings for, and he's a great guy. And Rockcast Hall of Famer Phil Robinson is also from Memphis. And Phil has sent me a top 10 list of his favorite songs that are about how effed up the music industry is. Well, yes, I'm not the only one who complains about the music industry. People have done that forever. And let's see what Phil's got. As his list starts at number 10, Billy Squire with The Stroke.
Filthy.
Oh, yeah. Stroke me, stroke me. You mean that wasn't about, never mind.
You've got a sick mind.
Number 9 is Galactic Cowboys with their song Tomorrow. And yeah, me and Ben wrote that song. Number 8 is Anthrax with Imitation of Life. Number 7 is Pink Floyd with Have a Cigar. Number 6 is Queen, Death on Two Legs. Number 5 is also by Queen, it's Flick of the Wrist. Number 4 is by Heart, Barracuda. Number 3, Rush, Spirit of Radio. Number 2 is King's X with Mr. Wilson. And yeah, I actually know what they were talking about in that song.
Yeah, you do.
And at number 1, Phil's favorite song about how effed up the music industry is, Galactic Cowboys with The Machine Fish Suite. Phil says, my favorite commentary on the music industry executed in true Galactic Cowboys and Monte Calvin fashion as a 7-part suite.
Sweet!
Well, thanks, Phil. I wrote those songs after I'd moved back to Kansas City, and I would stand there for hours and play through the whole thing, and I kind of had it all in my head. And when it was time to make the album, I flew down to Houston and got in the studio with the guys, and I just showed them what I had in mind, and we worked that whole thing up within one night. Obviously, it took days and weeks to record it, and everyone added in their own sounds and textures, but I was really happy with the way it came out. I think there's some really strong musical and vocal things going on in there. And lyrically, it gave me a chance to express some of the emotions and frustrations I had felt throughout my career.
You find these things interesting?
Phil also has some honorable mentions, which include Crunchy, The Underground, Hey Hello, How I Survived the Punk Wars, and The Ramones, Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio?
Punks!
Well, good job, Phil, and thanks for reminding all of us just how much the modern music industry sucks. Back in the 70s, you'd see bands put out numerous albums before they ever hit it big. They were allowed to grow musically and experiment, but not anymore. Unless you're lucky enough to be on Metal Blade or a progressive label, you're expected to have a hit. And if your first album does not have a hit song, you are done. So thank God that bands like Rush and Kansas and Blue Oyster Cult were allowed to make more than one album and weren't just kicked to the curb like Geffen did to Galactic Cowboys.
You are bitter.
No, I'm not bitter.
Yes, you are.
Okay, well, maybe a little.
A lot.
All right, maybe a lot.
Get over it.
Okay, I got a lot of comments, questions, and emails from you guys, including one from Gary in Baltimore, who sent me his review of the Progressive Nation cruise that just took place back in February. And in case you didn't hear about it, it was a festival on a ship that was put together by Mike Portnoy. And about a year and a half ago, me and Lindsay wanted to go get married and then take this kind of cruise that had Lamb of God and Anthrax and all these heavy bands on it, but it was canceled. But this one was not canceled, and Gary went and said he had a great time. He said there was 41 bands on 5 stages on this big cruise ship, and he saw prog groups like Transatlantic Animals as Leaders, Devin Townsend, and King's X.
Never heard of him.
I guess Billy Sheehan did a bass clinic, and he got to chat with him afterwards. And he also got to see Spock's beard and thought their set was awesome. Of course, since Portnoy is in about 25 different side projects, he played drums for just about everybody. And apparently there was all kinds of different jam sessions that included Bumblefoot, John Anderson from Yes, and Adrian Belew.
Who are those people?
Gary said the whole cruise lasted about 4 days. He had an amazing time, and if it happens again next year, he will be there.
We've got to ask why.
So thanks so much, Gary, for the report. I'm glad you got to go. I'm not really into all that prog rock as much as you are, but I would love to play that sometime. Maybe you all should write Mike Portnoy and tell him to add Galactic Cowboys next year.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I also had several of you guys like Dan the Man Cunningham and Mr. David Whiteman.
The new face of evil.
Ask me about this new group called Baby Metal. So I got the album and checked into it, and it turns out they're these little Japanese girls doing kind of a cross between pop music and metal. And, well, here's a little taste of what it sounds like. So you know me, I'm always up for something that's kind of different and twisted.
You're sick.
And this definitely intrigued me, and so I listened to the whole thing, and there are definitely some cool riffs and heavy stuff on it, and I like that. But all the lyrics are in Japanese, and the girls' voices kind of remind me of Alvin and the Chipmunks. The other thing that kind of bothered me about this is it kind of seems like a project that was put together by a producer. The music is really tight and heavy and really well done. But from what I've read, it sounds like the producer probably just hired the band to do the music and then put them together with these chicks that knew nothing about metal. So it may be a little bit contrived, but if you like power metal and that kind of stuff, you may dig it. And like Dan Cunningham said, maybe kids will like this and stop them from listening to horrible pop music like Justin Bieber.
Ah!
But don't get me started on that douchebag Justin Bieber. And for that matter, don't get me started on kids. Most of the ones I've seen are incredibly ungrateful and void of personality. And they're all growing up to be mind-numbed little zombies with no grasp of reality. And I blame most of it on TV and the internet. With all the crap that our kids have access to these days, there's virtually no reason for them to have any kind of physical activity or even leave the house. And sadly, they're going to grow up thinking that every word that comes out of their mouth is important, and every thought they have should be posted on Facebook.
Sure, why not?
And holy crap, with all the porn you can get with just a click of a mouse? If you're an adolescent boy right now, you must think that women are airbrushed, never talk, and are there just for your pleasure. When in reality, most women are not perfect, you will never be able to figure them out, and more than likely, they will not be down with all the crazy stuff that you've seen on YouPorn. And don't get me wrong, I remember what it was like when I was young and I was wondering what love and sex was going to be like, and little did I know it was going to be nothing like it is in the movies. It's great in real life, but I don't ever recall Jennifer Aniston turning to somebody in the middle of an intimate moment and saying, "Oh my God, have I got a major sinus drainage going on right now?" Yeah, kiddies, those things happen. It's called living, and it's a great thing. Check into it.
I'd rather not.
All right, back to your emails. I got a question here from Greg Skipton. And he says recently he's been listening to Phil Anselmo's band Down. And they have members from Pantera, COC, and Crowbar. And you would think that putting all those guys together would make for a really awesome metal band. But Greg says he thinks they sound kind of mediocre, and he never has really cared for supergroups. And so his question is, hey, Monty, are there any supergroups that you have been a fan of?
Oh, is that a good question?
Well, Greg, I'm kind of with you on that. I'm not really a fan of supergroups either. I mean, I like some of the guys in Damn Yankees, but I wasn't crazy about the music of that band. And to be honest, most of the supergroups that I can think of, I pretty much hated.
Oh, like what?
You know, like Temple of the Dog, them Crooked Vultures, Audio Slave. Yeah, I was not a fan.
Hated it.
Of course, these days you got Chicken Foot with Sammy Hagar and Joe Satriani. And not only do I not like the music, I hate that name.
It sucks!
On the other hand, I did like Mr. Big. I thought they had some really good stuff, and they were definitely super. But then they kind of screwed it up for me by writing that song To Be With You, which is one of the cheesiest ballads ever.
It is indeed very gay.
Oh, and do you remember Rockstar Supernova? That had Tommy Lee, Jason Newsted, and Gilby Clark, and they went on TV looking for a singer. And the TV show was actually really good, but then I think they only lasted about a month as a band after they found the singer. They did record an album, but it only had one song on it that I even liked, and it was called Headspin.
All I want to say is you're the sad in my life. So you don't have to lie, and you don't have to cry anymore. Then I hear you say, let's live for the moment, this time. Why don't you just make up your
So that's Rockstar Supernova being really super.
Not so much.
Yeah, you'd think you'd get all these great players together and they'd make all these great albums, but that's not always the case. There's always exceptions to the rule, I guess, but the best definition of supergroup to me was the Beatles and the Who. No, each member didn't come from another famous band, but each member was super in his own right. I guess I'd also put Led Zeppelin in there, even though I'm not a big fan. And how about Cheap Trick?
Yeah, I guess.
Individually, those guys were all awesome in their own way, and they came together and made such great music.
Oh, yeah.
I also got an email from the before-mentioned Rodney in Memphis. And he had a couple of questions for me. First one being, hey, Monty, I was listening to Atomic Opera this morning. Whatever happened to them?
Does anyone care?
Of course, Rodney is referring to Atomic Opera, who was from Houston, and they were around in the 90s and shared the same management company as Galactic Cowboys and King's X. And I knew those guys pretty well, but I really haven't kept up with them over the years. So I'm thinking they may have broken up, but I do see Frank Hart on Facebook every now and then talking about a blues band or something that he has. But that's all I really know.
Unbelievable information.
Rodney's second question is, Monty, have you heard the KXM album yet?
What is that?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Rodney, because that gives me a chance to do a new segment that I've been wanting to do, and it's called The Doug Pennick Side Project of the Week. Oh, yes, it's my good friend Doug Pennick. And since moving out to L.A., he has done literally hundreds of side projects with everyone from the members of Pearl Jam to a Michael Jackson tribute album. And this week, he is in a band with Ray Luger, the drummer from Korn, and guitarist George Lynch from Dokken. But to answer your question, Rodney, no, I have not heard the album.
Oh.
Yeah, but I did see the video they made for Rescue Me, and I'd have to say it sounds like King's X to me.
Shocking!
So if you're a King's X fan, and from what I gather, about 99% of the people who listen to my show are, well, you should probably go check that out. And let me know what you think of KXM. But this has been another segment of The Doug Pennick Side Project of the Week. All right. Well, the next email comes to us from Ryan Kellison. And Ryan tells me that he has a hard time watching certain musicians perform. He says there's just something about Max Weinberg from the Bruce Springsteen band that kind of bugs him. And that even though he respects Marty Friedman's guitar playing, he can't stand to watch his right hand. Says it messes with his mind.
Freaks me out!
And Ryan's question to me is, hey, Monty, are there any musicians that you have a really hard time watching?
Answer me!
Well, let's see. I mean, if you're just talking entertainers, people like Beyonce or Nicki Minaj make me want to throw up. And I also despise people like Justin Bieber.
A douchebag.
But if you're talking actual musicians, well, that's a little harder. However, right off the top of my head, I'd probably have to say Bono from U2. And that's kind of tough for me to say because I used to be a big fan of his on the first couple albums. And I know the guy is a master at what he does performance-wise, but God, he just seems so self-important, I just can't take it anymore.
You're intolerant.
I also don't enjoy watching Chris Cornell very much, mainly because I am not a chick. And two, he just looks like he is in pain trying to get some of those notes out.
Yeah. And?
Plus, he just seems like a pompous ass.
You're hateful.
I also find it hard to watch Mick Mars from Motley Crue, mainly just because I feel sorry for him.
A pitiful thing indeed.
I also hate any guitar or bass player who just stand there and put out no effort whatsoever. Unless you are Mick Mars and have a disease, try moving around a little bit.
Yeah!
Then again, if you're John Myung from Dream Theater, you've probably got too much on your mind, thinking about all those notes you've got to play.
That's true!
Still, you're boring as hell to watch, John. I'm sorry. I love you, but that's the way it is.
Was that necessary?
And while I'm on the subject of bass players, I don't like anyone who wears their bass up underneath their chin. That may be the proper place to precisely play the instrument, but it does not look cool. So get yourself a longer strap and start rocking.
Let the anger erupt.
I also got a question from Matt in St. Louis who said, Monty, why do bands keep ripping you off? This riff by the Foo Fighters sounds like your riff in the song 9th of June.
Huh?
Well, yeah, if you don't know what Matt's talking about, I wrote this song called 9th of June back around 94 or 95, and it's got a riff in it that sounds something like this. And now here's the song that Matt's talking about by the Foo Fighters. All right, I see what you're saying, Matt, and there's definitely some plagiarism going on there. And not by me, but Dave Grohl.
I'm outraged!
But whatever, Miley Cyrus also did it. Yeah, see what I mean?
No, I don't.
So, as you can see, it's just a total situation, but there's really nothing I can do about it. When you have songs on the radio every day like I do, then people are just gonna naturally gravitate toward it. It's gonna get stuck in their heads, and they end up ripping off your riffs. But thanks so much for the question, Matt. I'll have my lawyers get on that right away.
Yeah, right. Get out of here.
I'm going to do another top 10 list, and this one comes from previous top 10 champion Brady Jennings. And Brady has sent the top 10 albums that spent the most time in his CD player last year. And he says, I know you'll give me crap for some of the stuff on here, but hey, I can take it. Ha! Well, all I can say, Brady, is you're a previous top 10 playoff winner. You're a Rockcast Listener Hall of Famer, and I also consider you a good friend, so you've got nothing to worry about, man. I will not be giving you crap.
A bald-faced liar.
So here we go with Brady's favorite albums of 2013, in no particular order, and it starts with Amarantha. The Nexus.
What did you just say?
Yeah, I actually know who you're talking about. I just don't know how to pronounce the name of the band. Anyway, moving on. The next one is Blood Good, Dangerously Close.
What?
The self-titled album from Dream Theater.
No way.
Next is We As Human, their self-titled album.
Are you kidding?
Next is Hear What I Say from Deliverance.
Jesus! Oh!
Brady also loved the self-titled release from Queensryche.
You cannot be serious!
He also listened a whole bunch to Imaginarium from Nightwish.
This is off the charts insane.
Next, it's Impermanent Resonance from James LaBrie.
Who the hell is that? I don't even know.
Followed by No More Hell to Pay from Stryper.
Oh, God! not! Ugh!
And disarm the dissent from Kill Switch Engage.
Ah, a superb choice.
Well, all right, Brady, you are in the playoffs. And on the next episode, we will find out if that is good enough to get you into the finals. You see, all year long, I have been reading the list that you guys have been sending me, and on the next show, I will be crowning a champion. So you are not going to want to miss it.
It's going to be awful.
I will also be announcing a brand new contest. Once again, it will involve you guys and your submissions, and there will be an amazing prize package.
Wow!
But don't worry, I'm still going to read your top tens. We'll still have the playoffs, like always. It's just now we're going to have two contests instead of one.
And that is so incredibly exciting.
Before I go, I wanted to thank everyone who has supported my art and music by going to my website, montycalvin.net, and ordering my t-shirts, CDs, and paintings, or making a kind donation. I'd also like to thank the School of Rock in Lee's Summit, Missouri, for hiring me to do all their murals. I just got done with that job, and if you'd like to check out any of the pictures, well, just go to my Facebook page. It looks like I'm going to be doing some more work for them at other locations here in the future, and I can't wait.
Goody for you.
If you'd like me to do a mural or painting for you, well, just drop me an email. The other day I heard from Bobby Schneck, who played guitar in Slash's band, and he commissioned me to do a painting of him and his girlfriend. So it's just that easy. Drop me a line, tell me what you've got in mind, and we shall discuss.
I am not capable.
I'm going to play you one last song off the new CD by the Dolly Rots. They're kind of a pop-punk band like Joan Jett or something like that. And this is their fifth album, and it's pretty good. According to Wikipedia, they got together back in 2000 after George Bush won the election, and they were so disillusioned that they just decided to do their music full time because they had no future. But fortunately for the Dolly Rots, Obama is in the White House now, and we've got all this hope and change, and things look so much better.
That was blazing sarcasm.
Regardless, kind of a cool band, this song is called Stupidly in Love, and I hope you enjoy the Dolly Rots.
I'm telling you, man, this stuff will poison your mind.
But that's going to do it for me for now, but I will be back soon, hopefully. But until then, this is Monty saying take care, don't let anyone tell you what to like, unless it's me, and
rock on.
The end.